everyone. Welcome to Five More Minutes, the show where two friends relive their childhoods, or in some cases, learn about everything they missed out on. I'm Kendra.
And I'm Scott. And we were recently just talking about that gem of a movie we watched last night, right?
Yeah. It was called Splinter?
Yes.
And it was weird, and we never actually got to see the monster. And I think that was a big letdown.
Yeah, that movie should have been renamed Shaky Cam, the movie, because I have never seen so much camera shake in a movie.
Well, Cloverfield, though?
I think this tops Cloverfield, because really? at least the shaky cam in Cloverfield, you could kind of tell what was happening. There were like full scenes in this movie that I just looked at Ian after. I was like, I honestly don't know what just happened in that scene.
That's true. Cloverfield actually made me motion sick, though, but it might have just been because we saw it in the theaters.
Well, plus that was like first person perspective.
True. And this was not that.
Yeah, this was just shaky cam.
It was almost like they made like body doubles of all the people who got ripped apart and then just paid someone to stick them together with a bunch of little pieces of wood.
Yeah, but then we never really even got to see it again. So I don't know why they bothered.
Yeah, and also Daniel, was that his name? Dennis? What was his name?
Was it Daniel? I don't know.
Denny, I think maybe.
Oh, it was Denny, yeah.
You would think I would remember since that's my dad's name.
Yeah, but Denny was the bandit dude, right?
But his like storyline was weird because then he was all like trying to redeem himself and being a good guy, but also he like made them drive him at gunpoint and like. And how was he moving after he got his arm cut off with a box cutter?
It was very flawed, like you're saying. So basically, the movie, we open on like two people going camping, a young couple. And then they stop for a hitchhiker and then they get held up at gunpoint by this guy and this girl. And things kind of deteriorate from there. But like 75-80% of the way through the movie, the bandit is like, oh, you know, I was trying to turn my life around. I was trying to get to this certain city and, you know, empty my bank deposit box.
His nest egg.
And then give it to people that he had wronged in the past.
The wife of someone husband. He murdered. Yep.
Yep.
He didn't really murder him, but he caused him to die 1 year later, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, he might as well have murdered him.
And we don't know, like, why he was out of prison or, like, did he escape? Because he was being looked for. Like, I don't. Yeah. There were some, yeah. And then normally the nerdy guy who gets too close to things dies.
Yeah, that's true.
And that guy was getting like all up in those like splintery hand things and was like never infected. And also those like moving hands were kind of weird looking.
Yeah, that's where like their whole budget went, is basically they tried to animate these severed hands that were like trying to walk around and kill people. And instead of seeing the monster, that's all we got to see was like two hands.
Yeah, it was also weird how his infected arm just started like misbehaving before his entire body was infected. And I thought that was weird, but
yeah,
I guess it was trying to like almost disengage from the good part of his body. I don't know.
It just wanted, I think once, basically the movie, for those who care, I don't know if there are any of you. But basically, these little animals or people get infected with these splinters that are like a parasite, and then it takes over. And then pretty much the only thing it knows how to do is be a heat-seeking missile to go attack people and get blood. So that's what was happening to this dude's arm. It was all infected, and it like snapped itself in half, and it was like trying to, I don't know, hunt and kill people on its own while it was still attached to him.
You know, I was also thinking the guy who cools down his internal body temperature, couldn't he have just like duct taped a couple bags of ice to his body so that he appeared cooler? Like, would they have been able to register that his I guess, you know, I don't know how like heat sensory things work, but he would be giving off the impression of a blob of ice.
Well, it was so stupid. That whole part after they cooled him off, like, I get that they cool him off. They're like, oh, I'm not going to be visible to its heat anymore. They basically put a bunch of bags of ice on him. But then we walked out of the store to, like, you know, try to be sneaky. He was still carrying a singular bag of ice. It was like, dude, that you're past the point of that doing anything. And then it made me angry because the whole time he kept checking this thermometer in his mouth. And I'm like, we already know that you're cold. And we know that you're going to be getting warmer as you go. There's no
there was one thing where he said that his body temperature needed to be cooler than whatever was on the thermostat in the building. And that was like 94. So I think that was for him to like check and make sure that he wasn't warmer than that. But it was, I don't know.
But at the same time, you know, it's going up. It doesn't matter. Like, what are you going to do about it? I don't know. It was a very interesting movie. And then
for sure.
And then they swapped out that car at the end and they didn't think anyone would notice.
Fine. Yeah. And also that cop car had its lights on, but the keys weren't in the ignition. And that bothered me.
You can turn on lights without having keys in the ignition.
Well, I know, but why would she be dumb and just leave her lights on? And then wouldn't the car been dead at some point? I don't know. I just.
That out of everything in that movie, that's a weird thing to get hung up on.
Right, right. Yeah. And then what I was going to say before we started this about your shirt is that yesterday when I was over at your parents' house, I had this weird like thing on Facebook. It was like a recommended like group thing or something. And it was like, you know, a Sasquatch sighting. And I was like, Keaton, you should dress up as like a Bigfoot and go walk around trails and scare people. Oh, and God. So that's what your shirt just made me think of.
Oh,
yeah.
I feel like that would end in him getting shot, probably.
That's what he said, but you know, you only live once. I don't see what the big deal
Why
is.
Why not make it way shorter?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
We also played the alphabet song game with your mom.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand what that was when I was hearing it in the background, but.
Well, it was her idea. So she wanted each of us to go around, to like we went around in a circle, basically, and we did each letter of the alphabet. So like I started with A, Keaton had B, she had C, I had D, and we went like all the way through and we had to pick a song that started with that letter and then we just listened to it.
Oh.
But I was like significantly faster at coming up with songs because my brain is like a music encyclopedia. And I kept having like three songs ahead and they were like, how are you doing this?
Just ready.
I was like, I listened to a lot of music, man. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, since smooth segue into
excellent
what we're talking about. But you know, we were thinking about doing one movie a month, and it's the last Thursday of the month, and I was like, wait, we should do a movie. And so we picked one that I briefly mentioned in episode 8 about the Satanic Panic. In the 80s, it was that lovely film starring a young Tom Hanks called Mazes and Monsters.
Yep.
So I guess we'll kind of start with the basic overview of the movie. This is also available on YouTube for free. I don't know if it was illegally on there for free or not. I couldn't really tell, but it is an hour and 40 minutes-ish.
Yep.
It was released in 1982. And it was based on the book called Mazes and Monsters, which was written by R-O-N-A. Is that Rona or Rona?
I was going to say Rona. That's,
yeah. I don't know if that's just because we're living in the Rona era or not, but.
Maybe.
And then either Jaffe or Jaffe.
I would guess Jaffe. I just said Jaffe. Rona Jaffe.
Oh, that's true. Anyways, but she wrote this book and it's loosely tied into the Egbert case that we case. It's not really a case, but we mentioned that last week. But
the Egbert case, as in this young man went down and had an incident after playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. So Tom Hanks was kind of the leading character. It was his first leading role in a movie. He'd previously only been in TV shows, like as, you know, like random people.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe like 5 or 6 appearances before this movie. And then the other three kind of main people, Wendy Crewson plays Kate. She's been in 142. She has 142 acting credits on IMDb. So quite a few. Yeah. Most are TV shows or TV movies. The most notable movie that I saw, which I don't know how well my knowledge is for movies, was Air Force One. I feel like that was a pretty popular movie, and everything else I saw was kind of like not really things I'd heard of. And she also was in 8 reoccurring episodes on 24.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. David Wysocki played Daniel. He only has 26 acting credits. He'd been in a few TV movies before that. He had reoccurring roles in the late 80s on General Hospital and Days of Our Lives, so kind of just more of a TV soap guy. I guess he was like the handsome guy in this show, so that makes sense.
Yep.
And then Chris Makepeace, who plays JJ, had 22 acting credits and nothing of note.
All right. He flies under the radar.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I obviously didn't mention other things that Tom Hanks has been in because I think we all know.
Yep.
I was going to ask you what your favorite Tom Hanks role movie is.
That's kind of tough. I mean, Forrest Gump's a classic. It's hard to beat that one.
Oh, I was going to say Toy Story.
that's your classic Tom Hanks movie? Wow.
I mean, just, you know, a voice actor. I like Castaway, Saving Private Ryan, and Forrest Gump. Those are all great movies. I mean, he's been in so many movies, I haven't even seen most of them. Mm-hmm. So those are probably like the first three that I think of, you know?
Those are definitely the big ones for sure.
Yeah. Couldn't find the budget anywhere, so that's a big sad. Just, I don't know, information not available.
Yeah, they don't really want people to know. I mean, like you mentioned, this was a TV network movie, so
yeah,
things were a little different.
And it was filmed in Toronto, which seems to be a pretty popular filming location, especially for TV movies, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of those like Christmas movies that my mom watches are filmed in Toronto. She's been watching them like all weekend. And it's July.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, she watches them every time they're on TV. Anyway, so like we mentioned, this book was written by Miss Rona. It was released in 1981, which is only 1 year after Egbert's death. So very quickly, like, turned into a novel. And if you haven't listened to episode 8, we talk about some of this stuff in more detail, which would probably give a little bit more context. But so she's not my cup of tea as far as what types of books she writes, so I didn't really do a lot of research there. Her first novel, I think, was the most popular one she wrote and a bestseller. And then she wrote, I think, a few in between this and that, but essentially trying to just like capitalize on this, you know, satanic panic sort of thing. And so I found some quotes from the prologue that she wrote, which were a little interesting. So she describes mazes and monsters as essentially, you know, D&D, as a war game with medieval background in which each player creates a character who may be a fearless fighter, a treasure hunting sprite, a magic using holy man, or a wily charlatan. The point of the game is to amass a fortune and keep from getting killed.
All right. Makes sense, I guess.
She also writes, these players, the ones who had gone too far and the one who disappeared, could be anybody's kids. Bright young college students sent out to prepare for life, given the American dream and rejecting it to live in a fantasy world of invented terrors. Why did they do it? What went wrong?
Oh, my.
Yeah, so very, very dramatic. This is also kind of weird. I think she was maybe like a quasi-romance writer, and so I found a blog called Mondo Molly, Lost Classics of Teen Lit.
Okay.
And there are some like weird passages. Well, just how we'll talk about this in a little bit, how Robbie has to like you know, have a pure body and mind or whatever. So there is like a lot of like sexual references before and after that, and just kind of worded oddly, I feel like, as book writers who write semi-quasi romantic novels do. And apparently there's a big part in the middle where it focuses on just the parents.
Okay, I see.
So like how when the movie starts and we get like a little glimpse of each family, in the middle of this book, there's it's devoted to the history and miserable present of everyone's parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was enlightening.
Apparently, Kate's mom gets an especially raw deal when her husband had a midlife crisis and left her for a 20-year-old. Now trying to get back into the dating scene herself, she accepts a setup with California's most eligible bachelor. This is a quote from the book.
Okay.
The first thing he said to her was that he was dismayed she had cut her hair. He said he had preferred it curly. It was sexy, like pubic hair.
So
that's the only one I'll read. But if that gives you an example of what I mean, there's also some references to whips and chains and things. So, I might link this blog in the show notes because if you're curious, you know, maybe we should start a book club and read the book.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like quite a read there.
Yeah. So anyways, I just wanted to, you know, briefly touch on that and just, you know, kind of keep it light.
Yeah.
But on Amazon, the book has 3.5 stars. It only has 41 ratings. It came out in the 80s. So it's not like when it first came out, people were buying it on Amazon.
Yeah.
The book description is just one sentence. Four university friends obsessed with a fantasy role-playing game delve into the darkest parts of their minds and carry the game one terrible step too far.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess we can talk about what actually happens in the movie now. So I watched it twice. Scott watched it once. I'm an overachiever, I guess.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me. The film starts with each of the three returning players to the Mazes and Monsters game at this college, all having like a brief conversation with one or both of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
I guess during summer break. And it's kind of like a, oh, you need to be like focused in schoolwork, or, oh, you need to go to a better university and work on computers, or, oh, I have writer's block because I haven't actually lived.
Yeah, it was weird.
And during this very beginning part, and maybe slightly into that, the song that's playing is so weird to me.
Oh my God, it's so terrible.
It's called Friends in This World. It plays several times during the movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of like a Disney movie song,
mm-hmm.
To some extent. Yeah, I don't know. I would like, I started the movie and I was like, this doesn't match.
No, it didn't match at all. It was like all happy and cheerful in the background. But then, yeah, like you're saying, they're talking to their parents and they're like either disappointed or like lecturing them on what to do. You're like, is this really the kind of song you think about when we're in this type of scene?
Yeah. So the three characters at the beginning are JJ, who always has on some sort of hat that relates to fantasy.
At least in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true. I think the last hat I distinctly remember him wearing was at that party they have at the beginning when he has on like a full suit and then like an orange construction hat. And
hard
I was like,
hat on.
I was like, okay.
So it did a couple times after that when they were montaging them playing together. He had like a cowboy hat and then like a fedora, but I think that was about it after. Yeah. And that wasn't even like halfway through the movie, I don't think.
But that hat at the beginning with the little spike, what was that?
That was like an old, I don't even know what type of location army that would be, but it was like an old style military helmet with a single spike on the top.
Like, yeah, some like World War One stuff or something. I don't know.
Yeah, when the movie opened and he got out of the car wearing that hat, I was already like, what are we doing? What is going on here?
Yeah, and he lives in some like downtown New York penthouse
mm-hmm.
thing with a doorman. It's like so.
Isn't he like also some type of, he's some type of like boy genius somewhat, right?
Yeah, he has like a really high high IQ, which is, I guess, why he's 16 and
going to college. Sophomore,
yeah. And he said his dad was like the second youngest something. I just can't remember what it was. Yeah. So anyways, that there's that. He also has a bird named Merlin who says birds can't talk.
Right.
And then there's Kate, who, like I mentioned, is talking to her mom about writer's block and how she needs to live first. And then Daniel, who is the pretty boy who gets all the girls but wants a relationship. But since he's pretty, he doesn't get the girls that want to be in a relationship or something.
I just get used for my body.
He has a reputation. And they all kind of seemed like pretty well off kids, like their families are well off. I mean, even But so they all arrive at school, they all run into each other, and they're looking for a fourth party member for their Mazes and Monsters game. And something along the lines of like, preferably one who doesn't drop out or get weird or something. Like they made some sort of comment like that, where they were like down a person because I thought I wrote it down, but I can't find it.
They basically, it seemed like they wanted someone like, if you're going to join us, you better be serious because we're going.
Yeah. And so JJ is in the library and he sees this young, tall, dark, and handsome Tom Hanks character named Robbie looking at the sign and like jumps up so fast and runs to the bulletin board. And it's just like,
yeah.
Says who he is and that that's his sign, and asks him if he plays Mazes and Monsters, and Robbie's just like, oh no, I can't play, like I failed school last time or whatever. And then he invites him to a party he's having.
Yeah, and at this point he has some dumbass pilot's hat on or something.
Yeah, he does. It's very Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so he goes to the party, he like Kate talks to him, finds out he plays. They get him to join.
And one thing, he was very reluctant, though.
He was. Yeah, he tried to say no. But one thing I also thought was really interesting was the way they were describing their characters, even this early in the movie, as if, like, they were like, oh, you're level 9? Mm-hmm. But, like, normally when you start playing a new campaign, you make a new character.
Yeah.
So instead of saying like I've played up to a level 9 character, they were saying like you are level 9. So they were already like embodying that aspect of it. So I made a note about that because it stood out to me. But then, you know, they decide to start playing.
I guess one thing of note before you go forward is when she approaches him at the party and they start talking about it randomly. He basically discloses to her that he had been kicked out of his last college because he was too involved in playing Mazes and Monsters too much, which is why he didn't want to play again. But they convinced him otherwise.
Yeah. And then him and Kate have some like romance where that song once again plays and there's a montage of them going running together and playing the game and making weird eye contact, like weird side facial views.
Yeah, it was so cringy.
All while that same song plays. It's I guess it does have some big daytime TV vibes.
I guess so, but man, that song was rough.
Yeah, and so then during this beginning part, Robbie mentions how he had a brother who disappeared on his birthday or like ran away on his birthday, and something about borrowing money and how maybe if he hadn't given him his money, he wouldn't have left or he would have come back. And his brother's name is Hall. And he also tells Kate he's been having dreams about him. This is very important later on. But yeah. And then there's like a scene where JJ goes to talk to them. And I guess it's probably because he's 16, but he's being like uber awkward that like Robbie is in Kate's room and he like won't come in. And then he goes to his room and talks about how maybe he should crash his motorbike into a building, but that would be too ordinary. People might think it was an accident. And then he says he wants to do something that would be remembered and do the stuff legends are made of.
And kind of this whole time while he was bouncing around talking to everybody and being awkward, he was just trying to set up another date to play, but they're all like, oh no, I'm busy, we got to do this a different day. And so he was feeling all down and out.
And it was only like 2 days. Like, it was only like having to wait 2 days. It wasn't like, yeah. And he talks to his bird, and then he thinks of the caves, and I can't remember what the caves are called. And I tried
they were like the Pequa caves,
something like that. Mm-hmm. And he says something like, "Boy genius suicides in caves. I'll be immortal." And then he like leaves to go look at the caves. And that happens like pretty early on.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how, because once they do start playing, they like kind of montage a whole bunch of different times they're in the room. So they're making it seem like time is going by, but I have no idea how much time went by.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. And then there's also that scene where like Robbie gets like a double bed, and then Kate's like really offended and isn't okay with it. And it's like, I'm not ready for this. And it's just like, how much time has passed?
Yeah, exactly. We just saw you in a montage like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. And then they play a session where JJ's character dies and can't be saved because Pardue, who is Robbie's character, doesn't have enough points left to like cast a spell. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of all like, they're not like mean to him, but they're like, well, weren't you paying attention? Like, you shouldn't have jumped over the cliff or whatever.
Yeah.
Or he jumped into a pit or something like that. But then he proposes that they play Mazes and Monsters in a real setting, and he'll be the maze master.
Right.
And so he wants to, like, he draws up a map of the cave system. He like gets outfits from the theater department. He borrows a skeleton from someone in the science department, and he like goes to the caves that they can apparently be expelled for going to, which also doesn't really make sense because it seems like it's off campus.
And it seems like it's pretty easy to get to for somewhere they're not supposed to be.
Yeah, and they drive straight down a road where it says closed. And it's basically, they turn it into LARPing, essentially.
Yeah, and maybe something else worth mentioning is that when he was JJ, when he was being all down and whiny, he did end up going to the caves with apparently the intentions to do himself harm. But then that's when he was like struck with the inspiration of like, maybe we need to do something down here and that'll make it feel good again. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, he, I think he was trying to get them excited to play, maybe.
Yeah.
Even though they were mostly kind of reluctant, and it was Robbie who was very much like, yes, this sounds great, we should do this.
Yeah, true.
And Kate was kind of like, yeah, I don't know, man. So, yeah. So while they're down there, they're looking for like a monster, and they decide to split up. And Robbie has this moment where he like sees the monster, which is supposed to be a Gorville.
Yeah.
And it's this big black lizardous man who walks on 2 feet
mm-hmm.
and has like a snout. I don't really know. But he like hallucinates that it's actually there, and that he like actually like
stabs it.
And he's like screaming like, help me or whatever, and they all come running, and they think he was just role playing, but it's clear that he actually thinks he saw it. So it's kind of like a weird moment. And I tried to look that monster up to see if it was like
a real
one, and I couldn't find any like D&D monsters named that. I think I saw maybe some sort of like mythological references to it, but recently, or more recently, it's been turned into a monster for magic. I was really confused. I didn't want to get like super caught up in trying to research that, but there's like a wiki page for it and everything, but it's definitely, I think it's like based on that monster, but I couldn't find any like fantasy role playing references to that monster before this movie. And that was kind of weird to me. Yeah.
So they just made it up kind of.
Yeah. And so then after that, he starts having more intense dreams that have to do with his brother, mm-hmm. but where he's basically being Pardue, his character, who is a holy man. And Hall appears as like a hooded figure with like bright light behind him, like very cinematic. And he tells him that he needs to be physically clean and all this stuff. So he like breaks up with Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And is like acting weird, and she's apparently the only one who notices. because she like asks like all of them if they think Robbie's been acting weird, and they're like, no, he's just really into the game, he's having fun. Yeah. She's just like, I don't know, guys.
Yes, he really likes the game.
Yeah. And then he has another dream where he's told that he must find the secret city under the earth after his mind has been cleaned, like his body.
Mm.
And so that's kind of like the big moment. And then this was a weird scene when Kate's like driving her car and sees someone turn down the road to the caves.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell who it was. I think you're maybe not supposed to. I'm not sure. Yeah. But then it's Daniel, like she knows it's him and she gets there and she's looking for him. And I almost feel like this scene was like unnecessary. Like, I think it was supposed to be suspenseful, but if she gets to the cave and all of a sudden starts yelling for Daniel, who has had no issues in any part of the movie so far.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a waste of time.
Yeah. It was almost like, and then when he came out, he was all like, you know, I was facing my inner, he said some kind of weird quote that was like, yeah, I'm facing up to my demons or something like that. And then he came out and he was like, oh, I feel good. So it's almost like they sent him into those caves to like conquer something within himself, and he came out feeling all good. And I don't know.
Well, he also said that he was trying to find the treasure that JJ buried, but then he couldn't find it, so he wasn't going to tell him about it.
It's just,
but
yeah,
maybe him like trying to cheat and not being able to gave him some sort of like self-realization that made him feel better or whatever. And then Kate and Daniel have like a romance after that.
But like
maybe,
you said
before that, I don't know.
You could have had that whole movie without that scene and it wouldn't have changed anything.
It seemed so out of like place to me.
Yeah, definitely.
And so then I think, I don't know how soon after this, because the timeline is kind of weird, I guess, in this movie. But they're having a Halloween party.
Yeah.
And I think Robbie was maybe there for a little bit. There were some like back and forth. Okay. But then it turns to this scene of him like laying down under like a covered thing, and it like pans from his feet to his head.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has like another vision from Hall. And I don't know. It was very dramatic.
Yeah.
And we don't really know where he is when that happens. Like, I don't know if he went to the caves to ended that, or if he was in his room. But then the next day, no one can find him. He's gone. Mm-hmm. No one knows where he is. And while they're doing that, they go in his room. They call his parents, and his mom like freaks out that he wasn't in class.
Yeah.
They find some like a map he had made that they think is of the caves, and they go to the police, but first they remove all their things from their game down there. And the police apparently knew people were playing Mazes and Monsters down there. But they all say that it wasn't them because they don't want to be implicated in anything. And this actually reminds me when they go and there's like people searching for him in there, that news scene that plays at the beginning is being filmed in like a side shot. And that didn't even register with me until the second time I watched it.
Mm.
And then after like a few minutes of that and, you know, them talking to the police and being questioned and the cop asking if the bird can talk.
You see
Robbie like walking through New York City with a slightly sensual soap opera sax music playing.
Yeah, that was weird. It was like, what are we doing now? We're just like walking through the city. And yeah, it was almost trying to like show off downtown streets is what it looked like.
Yeah, it was like he was walking down like Broadway or Fifth Avenue or something. I don't know. Those are the only two streets I know in New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like super weird. I really did not think that the music fit the vibe, but I guess if the author is like a quasi romance writer, maybe that's why they were doing that. But it wasn't like the right moments for that music. I don't know.
And after Robbie left and disappeared, it was really unclear how much time had passed before they had seen him, you know? And I don't know. I don't remember where they're going to college at. But it's implicated that he basically walked all the way to New York and he has no wallet, he has no money, he has nothing.
Yeah, that's true. And Yeah, because it's called like Grant University.
Yeah.
Or something. And Daniel's mom knocks it for being like not a good school. But I guess it could be in like the outskirts. But yeah, if he didn't have his wallet, he couldn't take a cab or, you know, ride a train or whatever. I'm assuming it was like over the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cause it seemed like maybe it was like a Thursday or something that he went missing if there was school the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not a lot of like, I don't know, time. We don't know anything about time.
No, it's kind of a question mark. Because there would be times where they were like, oh, we know he's missing. They're all talking to each other, trying to make a plan to find him. And they're like, oh, well, let's just turn in for the night. So there was like days of that. You're like, how long has he been gone?
Yeah. And this is getting pretty close to the end of the movie. I feel like kind of a lot of stuff happens at the end. And some of it was like a little weird and a little confusing.
Yeah.
So he walks by some guys who try to pickpocket him and they come up to him and they say like, what's in this or whatever. And it's like his spell component pouch that he's wearing on his belt.
Yeah.
And he's like, these are my spells. I guard them with my life. And then he like breaks free of their grasp and like runs.
Runs.
But then like any scene in New York City, he ends up in an alley where he
dead end alley.
Yeah. Which had very big like Batman origin story vibes to me.
Yeah.
But he has another vision of the Gorville in this alley. He thinks that the guy trying to rob him is the Gorville. So he takes out his dagger that he's apparently also just carrying around New York City.
Well, it was just like a buck knife. It wasn't a
dagger. Oh, it looked like a dagger, but maybe I just really wanted it to be a dagger.
In the scenes where it showed him and the Gorville, it showed up as a dagger. But then after you snap to reality, it was just a little pocket knife.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he stabs him. And he's still kind of in his, like, phase state for a while until he sees his reflection and sees the blood on his hand. And then he, like, freaks out and he goes to a payphone and he has the operator dial Kate. And
that scene, man. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And she asks him where he is and he gives her like the street corners. And then she's like flipping through her address book and finds JJ's parents' address and tells him to go there. And it's, I guess, later in the evening or night. She was in bed, but it didn't seem that late. I guess it wouldn't seem that late on the streets of New York City. So it is, you know, the city that never sleeps.
Right.
Never been there, but I do know that. Yeah. So this is the rest of, there's probably like 20 minutes left when this happens. And
yeah,
he like wakes Daniel and JJ up and she gets in her little car, which I didn't really pay attention to, but it kind of looks like a Volkswagen Rabbit, was it?
Yeah, I believe it was.
And they drive, we don't know how far.
No one knows.
But it looks like morning when they get to JJ's house.
Yep.
And the doorman says he's not there.
Yep.
And JJ's mom has redecorated his room again and he loves it. He has like director's chairs in there.
Yep.
And they pull out the map again because JJ has such a high IQ that he redrew it because they gave a copy to the cop discreetly. And then they end up having this realization that the two towers on the map are not from Tolkien, but are the Twin Towers.
Right.
So they decide to go there to look for him. And then I don't know the order of the cutting back and forth, but Robbie like never makes it there. He like sees two guys who look kind of similar to the guys who mugged him and then like snaps back into his like delusional state of whatever quest he's on. And he's like underground somewhere, like he went down a subway thing. I don't know if I missed how he got to that like weird basement part with that guy.
You didn't miss. It just kind of showed him there afterward.
So he like walks into this like weird room underground and then is like frightened by this like homeless man and says his name is Pardue and whatever.
Holy man.
Yeah. And the guy's like, I'm the king of France.
Your majesty.
And then he asks him, something and the guy's like, I don't know. And then he's like, what about the two towers? And he's like, I can tell you where those are.
Yeah.
And so then he gives him direction. So essentially, they're showing up at similar times, like his friends and him, but they keep missing each other, like up and down escalators and elevators.
Yep, classic.
Yeah. And then they see him get in an elevator and he's like phased in, like does not really seem to register them as his friends.
Yeah.
And they get up to like the roof, or I don't know if that was like an observation deck or whatever, right as he's about to jump off the roof.
Yeah.
And he's not listening to them. But then JJ says something like, I'm the maze master and you don't have enough points, because he said he's going to like cast a flying spell on himself.
Yeah.
And then and then Robbie like kind of snaps out of it or listens or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At that point. And then I think that's the last thing before the end thing, which is what we also watched in episode 8.
Yeah.
Where they go visit him at his
parents' place.
Parents' house.
Yeah.
And his mom is like excited and says she doesn't blame them and that none of his other friends come to visit him.
Right.
And then that's that scene where he sees them and thinks that like they're still in the game.
Yeah, they are all their characters. He's surprised to see Freelik, who died by jumping into the pit, but he's back now, so he's totally in the other world still.
Yeah, and this is like Kate narrates the end quote where it's like, and so we played the game again for one last time. It didn't matter that there were no maps or dice or monsters. Pardue saw the monsters. We did not. We saw nothing but the death of hope and the loss of our friend. And so we played the game until the sun began to set and all the monsters were dead.
That was a very dramatic ending. The part I thought about that I didn't think about when we watched it for the last episode was, they, you know, he was kind of going on and on about still being in the world. And they were like, Robbie, no, you're being ridiculous and this and that. But then they just like gave up and they just totally played into the fantasy and played the game with him, which I don't think would probably be healthy.
Yeah. And shouldn't he have been somewhere where he was receiving like therapy?
Yeah. Well, they said, his mother said when they arrived that he was receiving counseling from a doctor every so often. So she had made it sound like there had been progress, but it didn't seem like there was.
Yeah. Oh, I found where I just put the quote for when they were looking for a fourth player.
Oh.
Someone who doesn't flunk out or freak out. That's what they said.
Well, he freaked out.
Yeah. And because of that, also probably failed.
He probably did flunk out. He wasn't doing a whole lot of class.
But yeah, so Mazes and Monsters. I'm just going to go over the quotes I had really quick before we talk about the other stuff. But I think this was in that beginning opening scene with the news anchor guy. He says that it's a loss of distinction between fantasy and reality. So they're like really honing in on that. And then let's see. Oh, and then Kate says the most frightening monsters are the ones that exist in our minds. And that's probably like the deepest thing ever said in that movie.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. This bullet point that I kept accidentally touching my touchpad while I was making my notes. And I think some of my stuff got messed up. I don't know how many times I like accidentally started typing in like a line above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just some random other things I noticed. I already mentioned the level 9 thingy. They have like a crap ton of candles out every time they're playing, which I do
We did know that too.
I do know that there are people who like get into it and like set up their things like that sometimes. But in this case, they were definitely trying to like dramatize the satanic occult stuff.
Yeah, dude, it looked like that room could just like burst into flames at any moment. There's so many candles everywhere.
All while that song was playing too.
Yeah, exactly. Really set the mood.
And then they were painting minis during one scene and I liked that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
One of the parts that I thought was the most funny was once they started getting involved with the police to like help them find Robbie after he disappeared, all the interactions they were having with that detective. And he was just so like, what was one of the quotes? He's like, well, I don't think Robbie would be doing anything that far out. They're like talking to the guy. He's like, well, Mazes and Monsters is a pretty far out game. You never know. And then it was like later when they were on the crime scene and they were showing all the cop cars pull up to the caves and like two detectives were talking to each other walking up. And he was like, ah, man, apparently this has something to do with Mazes and Monsters. And the other guy was like, oh, yeah, I know Mazes and Monsters. My kids play that. And, like, the look that this other detective gave him, like well, yeah, you better put your kids down now, buddy. It's
like... Also, during that scene, it really confused me that they knew what car the detective drove, that they wanted to leave the map on his car. They were like, oh, yeah, that's his car. And then he just, like, sneaks over and no one sees him.
Robbie spent all this time making an ornate map, you know, obviously, and it didn't even seem like it was important for the police to have it, because clearly it didn't really relate to anything that was in the caves or anything like that. But they were hung up on, like, we must give him this map.
Yeah. I don't know. So what were your overall thoughts on the movie?
I mean, it is pretty ridiculous. I'm glad that the writers at least, you know, halfway through stopped putting weird hats on JJ's head, because I was getting, like, irrationally angry at him in a tuxedo wearing a hard hat. I just wanted to, like, slap the hard hat off his head. But I mean, it was weird. The whole thing wasn't even, like, shot and sequenced very well, because we got some backstory for like 30 seconds from their parents at the beginning, but then the only people's parents we ever saw again was Robbie's. So, like, the other ones didn't even matter. And I don't know. They were just trying to, like, oh, yeah, these people have complex backstories. Not really, but we want you to think they do. And then, yeah, it was just, and it felt really dragged out. It did not feel like that movie had to be an hour and 40 minutes, you know?
Yeah, which is also even short. I mean, that was used to be, like, average movie length, but that's pretty short nowadays for a movie, and it did feel like there was some, I don't know, weird unnecessary stuff.
Yeah, it just seemed like the parts that they flew through, like them playing early on, you almost could have spent a little more time there developing things, but they spent all their time in, like, this big time gap where they're looking for Robbie and, like, nothing was really happening.
Yeah, and, like, the only, like, climactic action, if you even want to call it that, is when they're in the World Trade Center.
Yeah, that's when, and, like, oh my gosh, we almost have him.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, it's like there was no real stakes. Because, I mean, like you said, Kate called Robbie's mom once he disappeared, but they're just like, oh, he hasn't been at school. And she's like, what? He needs to be at school. And then they're like, oh, he's probably around here somewhere. We'll find him. And then they just hung up. They're like, and she's like, I got scared. I don't know. I didn't know what to do. Like, okay.
Yeah, and the real reason why she hung up was basically so that his mom wouldn't know he didn't go to class. Not her being scared. Like, what?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It was weird. I mean, it was slightly entertaining at times, but I mean, I'm not going to go out and say it's a good movie.
Yeah, I don't recommend this one like I recommend the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Yeah, because this one, while, you know, had, you know, like Tom Hanks and some people who actually were decent actors, they weren't terrible. It was better than the actors in the Dungeons and Dragons movie. But this one had, like, underlying just, like, tones of weird things that didn't really make sense. And you could tell it was just, you know, supposed to be a slam piece on the game. And that's really all they were trying to drive home. I do, however, enjoy the VHS cover that I see on Wikipedia. That's pretty hilarious. With all of them, like, dressed up in their outfits.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that.
It's pretty cool. And I like how it just says Tom Hanks in Rona Jass, Mazes and Monsters.
Let me look it up.
Yeah, it's got, like, this cool background.
Yeah, the yellow one.
Yeah.
There's a couple different ones, because there's some that's, like, just Tom Hanks' face.
Really?
Yeah.
They probably put those out after he got famous. They're like, okay, people come back to watch this, please.
Yeah, it's really weird. I'll text you some of these. I don't know.
Yeah, they did what they had to do, but I don't know. One other thought that we had when we were watching it was that, I mean, underlying, Robbie probably had all these problems from his brother disappearing, and I guess just another way to bring him into fantasy was another way to bring it out, because that's who he was seeing the whole time, was his brother telling him what to do. And he's just probably some kind of emotionally scarred from that, I'm guessing. Well,
one of them also makes a comment about how his brother is probably dead. So I also got the impression that maybe his brother had committed suicide.
That and could
he,
be.
And he had like twisted it in his mind as him just like leaving. But I don't know. It was not really explained and it was kind of unclear.
That would almost make more sense because they, in the brief while that you see his mother, apparently she's like an alcoholic or something. So I don't know if she's like dealing with stuff differently, but weird things.
Yeah. I just sent you, I'm sending you the third one right now. These are all really epic.
Really epic.
Yeah. And then, it's just his face. I don't know.
That's hilarious.
But yeah. And so then the other thing, like I didn't really know kind of until we got partway into the movie that Robbie's character, it's like she split up some of the different parts of this being based on Egbert's story because JJ is 16. He's a sophomore. He's essentially who Egbert was, like going and exploring the tunnels, talking about suicide, that sort of thing. But then Robbie is the one who actually has like,
the psychotic break.
Yeah. And then obviously no one, dies. And I did read something today that said Egbert's parents never said anything in terms of like blaming the game. Mm-hmm. So that might be why they tied that into what Robbie's mom said when they came to visit. Cause she said something like, it's not your fault.
I don't blame you at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting.
But yeah. So and just like the stuff JJ says is like so fast at the beginning that you kind of assume it's not going to be him. So then you're just like, well, then wait, what is like going on in this movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was definitely weird. Some interesting creative choices were made.
Yeah. So, obviously we watched it because why not?
Right.
But. I guess if you're curious, watch it, but I'm not going to recommend this like I recommend Dungeons and Dragons.
And it'll give you a little chuckle here and there, but I mean, obviously it's a product of its time. It was made in 1982. So
yeah, and it was made for TV, and it definitely has like all of those vibes.
For sure.
But keeping in the spirit of bad movies, I did find some reviews and ratings.
Oh, perfect.
They are, I must say, they are not quite as fun as reading the Dungeons and Dragons movie ones, but
that one's probably a little more divisive, I would say.
Yeah. So the average user rating on IMDb was 4.1 out of 10, was that better or worse than I don't remember what the Dungeons and Dragons movie one was. It might be somewhere around. I don't remember either. There's a 1 out of 10 star review that says a shockingly bad propaganda.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten about this film until now. This was the most blatant and worst attempt to demonize a hobby that I have ever seen. Its message seemed to be, don't teenagers use their imagination. I think it's supposed to say, don't let teenagers use their imagination. Oh, yeah. They might take games seriously, go mad, and hurt people. I can only guess that the unimaginative writers of this piece thought that D&D style games are a form of evil ritual or arcane worship.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not far off.
There's a 2 out of 10 star review, crummy, transparent, failed drama with a blunt, misguided message. Sure. A full-on smear campaign about the evils of Dungeons & Dragons from the height of the parental outcry against the game. Funny and sad in the same context as Reefer Madness? I don't know what that is.
Reefer Madness? That's when people were starting to smoke pot. It was like the start of like the drug war or whatever.
Yeah. That makes sense. I understood what both the words were, but I didn't. They meant nothing in my brain. this review says badly produced, terribly acted, smug and boring and predictable to the final reveal. It's a living stereotype, the very essence of a bad made-for-TV movie.
All right. I see.
Maybe a little harsh in some place. I thought the acting was okay.
It was definitely a little better.
Yeah. This next one's also really long, so I won't read the whole thing, but 2 out of 10 blurs the line between fantasy and stupidity. I didn't even know this was originally a made-for-TV movie when I saw it, but I guessed it through the running time. Oh, through the running time, because it was short. Yeah. It would be like 2 hours with commercials. It has the same washed-out colors, bland characters, and horrible synthesized music that I remember from the 80s, yeah. plus a social platform that practically screams after-school special. Anywho, let's see here. Stuff about Satan, kind of like a summary. And it says, don't look at it as satire, just a laughable piece of 80s TV trash. And then if you do that, you'll have a good time. If you can stay awake.
Yeah, if you watch it knowing what it is.
Yeah, like we did.
Mm-hmm.
I did find one 7 out of 10 review, and I didn't spend a lot of time going through reviews, so I don't know if there was any better than this or not. Yeah. There probably was. Not as bad as people say. Somehow I missed this movie when it came out and didn't see it until about 12 years later. I bought it based on the cover copy, which seemed to indicate a fun fantasy movie. D&D player ends up in a fantasy world. It never occurred to me that they meant fantasy literally. However, all caps, a lot of people have been unfairly attacking this movie for years, claiming that it has espouses the dangers of role-playing. Fact, all caps. Tom Hanks' character is established to have psychological problems from the beginning of the movie, including an inability to separate fantasy and reality. Fact, all caps. This psychologically unstable character is the only one to have this problem. Fact, all caps. The rest of the players use problem-solving skills they developed from role-playing to save his life. True. Although JJ admittedly does have some sort of mental stability issues.
Yeah.
Far from showing the dangers of role-playing, I thought this movie did a good job of showing the kind of deductive and inductive reasoning that can be developed by using your imagination. I think it did at least as good a job defending role-playing as it did attacking it.
I would just,
especially with like the timeliness of the movie. So I feel like this person doesn't know that it was like based on
real incidents.
Yeah. But very, you know, they wrote it pretty well. They use all caps to draw attention to their points, etc.
And I would argue that the whole, you know, rapport with the cops throughout is that they're always shooting it down as super negative. Like, you know, there's no one really championing it. All the kids are like, when they get accused of playing it, they're like, oh, I used to. I don't do that. You know? Everyone avoids it.
The audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes was a 19%.
Yeah. Ouch.
Some of these reviews were weird. There was one. It was a 1-star review.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, I loved this when I was a kid. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you for your input. Not anymore.
But. There was another 1-star review. This movie was stupid and ignorant attempt to examine Dungeons and Dragons. The acting is very bad. All caps. Everybody stinks. This was done back in the day when people were convinced that playing role-playing games would cause you to kill yourself. So leave it to Hollywood liberals to exploit a stupid and baseless accusation. Insert global warming here for reasons not entirely clear. The one thing that is shown in the movie, yes, which is glossed over, is that the fact, this person doesn't know how to type, that the players are already mentally unstable before playing the game. So the game was only a catalyst for them to go nuts. Just about anything could have served as a trigger to send them over the edge. All caps, a really bad movie. So obviously this person is probably one of those people that I just don't like based on some of the phrasing of that.
Sure.
Hollywood liberals, again, when it's based on like a true do your research, people.
Yeah.
There was a 1.5 out of 5-star review.
Ooh, you can leave halves.
Watch out for the friendship montage with corny friendship song.
Yes.
This could have been cool, low budget, exciting, and more creative hands, but it's just sort of standard rhubarb. I mean, why take up a pretty cool title, Mazes and Monsters, for this? Tom Hanks isn't particularly appealing either. I'm still not sure how the hell he got anywhere with the likes of this and Bachelor Party. I've never seen that movie, but it must have been good. And then just to throw it in, 1 4-out-of-5-star review.
Oh, nice.
If you take it as a social commentary on fantasy role-playing games, this movie seems shrill and over the top. But I have to admit that the scene on top of the World Trade Center towers took me back to a long time ago when the tower still stood and we hadn't mired ourselves in an ugly foreign war. It is a time when Tom Hanks was young If you take it as a piece of entertainment, this movie holds its ground. Watching Hank's character go slowly mad is sad, and that makes the final scene all that more pathetic. A good movie and recommended, especially to gamers.
Gamers? Why?
I don't know. But that just made me think that I forgot about Sleepless in Seattle, and I actually really love that movie, but I've only seen it once.
Okay.
Because it's a little bit of that like romantic vibe that's good every once in a while.
Yeah. Tom Hanks was just learning how to act in this.
Yeah. I mean. And I also read something today that was like, Tom Hanks never even mentions this movie when he talks about things. So like,
I would probably do the same. You probably want to distance yourself a little bit. I mean, does Jeremy Irons still talk about the Dungeons and Dragons movie?
I bet they have a club.
You think so? Like Tom Hanks and him show up to a conference room.
And Marlon Wayans.
Yeah, and just every other people that have accidentally been in a bad movie, like Gary Oldman in Tiptoes. That had Matthew McConaughey in it too. I've never seen it, but boy, I watched the trailer for that.
Maybe we should watch that. I don't even know what you're talking about.
If we can find it. So Gary Oldman plays a little person in it, and Matthew McConaughey is his brother. And then Kate Beckinsale wants to date and have a family with Matthew McConaughey, but he's like, the whole time he's like, what if we have little people? Like he was like the only one that was a normal size in his family, so he's afraid that his kids are going to be little. But it had all these like big A-list actors, and it just looked like a terrible movie, and it flopped. And people speculate that either McConaughey or Oldman or somebody bought the rights to it, because you basically can't find it.
Maybe they all chipped in.
they very well could have, but yeah, pretty ridiculous. If you want to have a good laugh, you can watch the trailer for it. I know that's still out there.
What's it called?
Tiptoes.
Tiptoes.
Yeah, it came out in like 2008.
Oh, that's not even that old.
No, exactly.
Well, if we do a movie next month, you can pick it.
There we go. We'll see if we can find it.
Yeah, so any other final thoughts about this masterpiece of a classic?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've hit everything pretty hard. The only other thing I guess I'll say is they felt like they had JJ's character fleshed out okay, even though he was annoying at times. Then Tom Hanks, obviously, he was kind of the main character, had a character. But Daniel or whatever, he had like no... He had nothing. he was just kind of there.
All he did was find the map Robbie drew, and it was rolled up on the desk, so he didn't even have to look for it.
No, like all he did was whine that he was a pretty boy. He was a pretty boy, and he just hung out. And then even Kate didn't have a whole lot, but I mean,
she had more though, time. And she had like some of the voiceover narration sections and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It is actually impressive to me that they included a female.
That's true.
So, go Kate. Back
in that time, yeah. They needed something.
Go Wendy Crewson.
Yeehaw. Yeah. Yeehaw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hope all of the, like, 20 of you that listened to this just yeehawed with us. And if you didn't, hit that 15-second back button, do it again.
Oh. Play it on loop.
Yeah. Are you ready for your quiz, or do you have more things to talk about?
Let's hit with the quiz and see if I think of anything else.
Okay. I had kind of a hard time coming up with questions, but I'm not asking you for a bunch of numbers like usual, just once.
Oh, okay.
First question. How old was Tom Hanks when he starred in this movie?
Oh, shoot. Was he 26?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get you. What is the name of the theme song?
Oh, shoot. It was that super corny one. Didn't it have like love in the title or something?
Nope.
It didn't have love? Nope. There's something in the world, right?
Yep.
Oh, no. I was going to say love in the world.
Oh.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Friends in this world.
Oh, okay.
I think that should be our friendship song.
Oh man, if I have to listen to that song again, that might be rough.
What was the name of the monster? that Robbie was seeing?
The Gorville.
Yeehaw.
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of the author?
The author, Rona Jaff, however you want to say that.
Yeah. Who does the man Robbie meets under the subway tell him he is?
The King of France.
There you go. See, I gave you an easy one this time. You got. Well, you still missed one.
But I had 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Passing grade.
That's pretty good, you know? I didn't ask you, like, what year something was published, or I probably shouldn't just popped my back while I was talking, but that's fine.
That's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, so, wild movie.
Yeah.
At some point, we're going to have to get ahead in our recordings again.
Yes, probably.
Also, you're going to be gone. When are you going to be gone?
The 7th.
So no, and then, but Brewfest.
Oh, that is August 18th through like 22nd.
We're going to have to do some recordings.
Yeah, we should be able to do some next week.
What are you doing next weekend?
I don't think anything. Oh, right. Yeah, because this weekend is the 31st. Yeah, nothing this week. The week after, I will be traveling.
I want to go golfing, but it's also, you don't have very many free weekends, so I don't want to like come to your house since you're going to be gone so much, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, if I come there, then when do you get to relax?
I mean, I can relax for you. Relax after we go golfing.
Okay. We'll talk about this later.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, anywho, anything else to talk about or should we plug stuff?
Yeah, go for it. What do you got to plug?
All right. Well, I'm going to plug 2 things, I think. So, this album came out called Hotel TV by the band Lawrence. It's a brother sister duo. They're super good. It's a little jazzy. I saw them live. They opened for John Bellion, the last concert I went to. Big sad there because of the coronavirus. Yeah. But yeah, it's a rad album and I feel like everyone should just listen to it. And then I'm also going to plug my dice shop, Broken Bow Dice Shop, because I am updating my my shop this Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Look at that. It'll be all kinds of dice.
Yeah, and you can find that shop on Etsy.
Perfect. I don't have too much to plug this week. I'll give Ian a shout out for helping us connect internet throughout the house. Crawling under there was real fun. I got real dirty. And then I just started learning some combos in the game Guilty Gear that came out a little while ago. So shout out.
I don't even know what that
is. It's a fighting game. So shout out to Guilty Gear.
Should we plug Ian's handle so that if this podcast blows up in like 2 years, he'll get a bunch of followers?
I believe it's at GoodyMon22.
Yeah. Give him a follow.
Just let him know, hey, how dirty are you? Ask him that question. And
he loves getting asked
that question. Yeah, I'm sure he won't block you.
Yeah. Can't wait for him to listen to this.
Yeah, we'll find out if he does. He'll be like, excuse me?
Well, no. Ian, we'll know if you listened. If we don't get a how dare you message the day after this comes out, we're going to know you didn't listen.
We also, after we watched the movie last night, the great movie Splinter, not great. We played the new Mario Golf, which was pretty cool. I won the first 18 holes and he won the second. So we are officially tied 1-1 right now. Yeah.
Wow. But wait till we take him real golfing.
That would be really something if we got him out there.
I think we just have to, Ian, stop listening. I think we just have to, I should put my tonneau cover back on and we can put all the golf clubs in the bed of my truck. And then we can tell Ian that we're just going to go to some cool little like restaurant out by a Sultan, because he doesn't know any of these things, right? So when we turn on that street, he's just gonna think we're going to some like hilltop view out in the desert sagebrush place, and he's not gonna know. And then what's he gonna do, you know?
Walk home.
He'd get lost
though. He's got internet.
What if we take his phone?
That would be something. If we left him stranded, like, we got your phone, but you only get it after golf.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, he could just drive the golf cart, hit a couple balls every once in a while, and wear a lot of sunscreen, and he'd be fine.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, if that's everything, if you want to send us an email, questions, comments, concerns, ask for help on your homework.
Yeah.
You can send that to 5FIVEMoreMinutesPod@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook at 5MMPod.
Yeah. And if you don't start giving us a follow, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to remove all the knobs on your cabinets and drawers and you won't be able to open them.
And at this point, it's pretty easy to figure out who's not following us because we don't have very many followers. So it could be any one of you. Hey,
I'm just going to throw a dart at a board and I'll find you.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.